Today's shir is Masecht Basra Daf Kuf Zayin. We will begin on Daf Kuf Zayin Amud Aleph, the second line from the top, Itmar. Our Gemara continues to discuss situations where there were brothers who inherited from their father, and now after that division was made, certain circumstances occurred. It says the Gemara, Achim Shechalku, you have brothers who divided the father's estate. Most Rishonim explain that a Gemara is referring to a situation whether there's two brothers or three brothers. It really doesn't make a difference. Achen Shechalku, if they divided their estate, and then Uba Bal Chayv, and someone who has a legitimate claim that the father owed him money comes to claim that debt, and he takes from one of those brothers one of the fields. And the Rishonim discuss at great length which field is the field that this Bal Chayiv specifically took. Some Rishonim say that the Bal Chayiv has a right to take any field that he wants. The field that he wants, a variation of that, is the field perhaps that's closest to his other fields. That is the field that this Bal Chayiv has a right to take. Of course, it's a difficult pshat. The Rabbi similarly says that Gemara is referring to a situation that only one of the brothers is here, and that's why the Bal Chayiv goes to that brother, because that's the brother that's convenient to go to. But of course, the Rishonim, as I started saying, have difficulty with this pshat, because they say, why should this brother, the brother that the Bal Chayiv just chose to collect from, be the brother that should be held responsible? And that's why Tosfos and other Rishonim say that one of the fields, the father had designated as an apoyteki. Apoyteki means apoyte heikoi. He had pledged that field to be designated to pay off the debt. And now one of the brothers got that specific field, and that's the field that this Bal Chayiv takes. And now the Gemara in a moment will begin to discuss how do we go further now that this brother lost out. However, other Rishonim explain that the halacha is that a Bal Chayiv collects from Beinonis, and here we're referring to a situation that one of the brothers, as they divided the estate of the father, obtained the Beinonis property, and the Bal Chayiv comes to collect that Beinonis property, and now that brother feels that he lost out. What is the case that he took the Beinonis property? Again, there are different variations amongst the Rishonim. Some Rishonim say that the situation here is that the father had left Beinonis and Zeburius property, and the Bal Chayiv is collecting the Beinonis property. Other Rishonim suggest that it's referring to a situation that the father had left Beinonis and Idyas property, and the Bal Chayiv doesn't have a right to collect Idyas, but he does have a right to collect Beinonis, and that's what he took. Actually, the Tzais wants to suggest that this Machloikas Rishonim is really based on a much more fundamental question. We know, we learned the Gemara Masecht Ksuba says that Midoraisa, actually, a Bal Chayiv collects Zeburius. Just the Chazal said that he should be able to collect Beinonis. Kadesh Leitenel Delos B'nefnei Lovin. Chazal were concerned that if a Malva will only have a right to collect Zeburius, no one will ever want to lend money. The question, says the Tzais, that these different pshatim represent, actually is a question: was that then also said to Yorshim? The Banda Amrim, that the Rishonim that explained that our Gemara was referring, that the brother who had to pay off the debt was the brother who had Beinonis, is of the opinion that that obligation is not only said to the actual loiver, to the father, but it was also said to the Yarshin. Whereas the other Rishonim say the din of Beinonis was only said to the Leiva himself, the father. However, the children, the Yarshim, don't have that same obligation. And in a moment, perhaps we'll give an explanation to understanding this Machlokes Rishonim, which actually speaks to some of the basic concepts of our Gemara. So here they collected the Beinonis or whatever field from one of the brothers, and this brother says that I now lost out my share. What do we now do? Certainly, continues the Gemara, Rav Amar, Batla Machlokes. Because of this development, the property is now redivided, minus this piece of property. They redivide everything. Shmuel Amar, and the Gemara is going to explain in a moment each one of these opinions. Shmuel Amar Viter, the brother who had to pay off the debt is the one that loses out. Ravasi says, Noit Levi B'Karka Revi B'Maz. As we're going to see later in the Gemara, the number of Pshatim and Rishonim, how to understand Rav Asi's opinion. We will now explain the Gemara according to the opinion of the Rashbam, which is the opinion that most Rishonim follow. Rav Asi's opinion is that this brother will have to be compensated for the property he gave up, but he'll only get a quarter, not what he gave up, and that will be, and the people that pay him up have a right to pay him up either with money or with karka. And now the Gemara begins to analyze each of the opinions that we just quoted. Rav Amar, Rav of the opinion, Batla Machlokes. The Machlokes, the entire original division of the estate becomes null and void. Because Rav is of the opinion, says the Gemara, Kasavar, Ha'achim Shechokim Yarshim Hein. Brothers who divide the estate are considered Yarshim. And therefore, if their Yerusha is touched because of this new development that the Baal Chayiv came, their entire Yerusha has to be redivided. And there are two ways that I saw, the Stipler goes at length to explain two ways the Rishonim understand the opinion of Rav. One way of understanding the opinion of Rav is that Yesh is Breira. Huvra Hadovel Mafreya. It has now become obvious that this entire division of property was done improperly, because this piece of land that was taken by the Baal Chayiv was really never part of the Yerusha. And that's why that the entire estate has to be divided again without this property being part of the division. However, another approach that the Rishonim suggest is the Achim Shecholku Yarshim Hein. The Achim are the brothers, the Yarshim of the father are an extension of the father. And since they're an extension of the father, just like the father had an obligation to pay off his debt, so do these children have that obligation to pay off the debt. And therefore, they're all equally obligated. And therefore, if one brother paid off the debt, they all have to compensate him. What is the nafkamina between these two pshatim? So one nafkamina might be the question that we just discussed a moment ago. We discussed a moment ago that a loiva himself certainly pays off a debt with beinonis. The question, we quoted the Ktzos, that discusses, does that obligation also apply to Yarshim? That Machlokes may be connected to this Machlokes. If we learn Pshat and Al Gemara, Ha'achim Shecholku Yarshim Heim, that they consider an extension of their father, so just like the father who was the Loiva, Chazal say he should pay off the debt from Beinonis, so too will be the obligation of his Yarshim to pay off the debt with Beinonis. If, however, we learn the other pshat, that's just a question of Huvra Adovel Mafreya, that the division was never a division, it could well be that the obligation that applies to the father doesn't apply to the children. Another nafkamina between these two pshatim could be a question that the Brisker Rav discusses. According to the opinion of Rav, which, as we're going to learn, the halacha follows the opinion of Rav. That once the Baal Choyf comes, the din is that he could take what he's owed, and now the estate is redivided. Ask the Brisker Rav, how do we look at this situation? Doesn't mean that it was never divided, the entire division was done improperly, and now we go back to the beginning. It doesn't mean until the point that the Baal Choyf comes, the division stands. Now the Baal Choyf came, there's a new situation that Chazal, that we have to take into consideration. And at this point, we pay off the Baal Choyf and we divide the estate. If we say the Pshat that Huvra Dovra L'Mafreya, that this division was an incorrect division, so then the question of Brisker Rav is answered. There was never really a division. If, however, we follow the opinion that the division was a division, that they're Yorshim, and they carry the obligation that their father carried, then the halacha will be that the division was a division, and now a new situation occurred that will require adjustment. But that doesn't put into question what happened until now. The Rashbam furthermore says, according to the opinion of Rav, that all of the brothers are really equally responsible to pay off this debt. And therefore, if it was one specific brother who paid karka, it was really not his sole responsibility, and therefore all the brothers, they have to redivide. Says the Rashbam, that let's say one brother, why did he pay karka? The reason he paid karka was because he didn't have cash available. So let's say one of the other brothers says to this brother, instead of you having paid karka that we inherited from our father, you should have paid cash. You didn't have cash, I have cash. So now he goes back to the Malva, he goes to the Baal Choyf and says, here's cash, and give back the karka that we want to keep as the estate to divide. Says the Rashbam, the halach would be as follows. If the Baal Choyf still has the karka he obtained from that brother, he would indeed have to return the karka and take the cash. But if by the time this brother comes with this request, I'll give you cash and give me back the karka, this Baal Choyf would have already have sold the karka, the halach is that you don't have, the brothers don't have a right to go to the koinah, to the customer of the Baal Choyf, and make him give back the karka. This is the opinion of Rav. Shmuel, however, holds viter, that the brother who paid, he's the one that lost. Why? Kosovar, Shmuel is of the opinion, ha'achim shechokul l'kuchas hava, brothers who divide an estate are looked at as if they bought property one from the other. Not only are they looked at as people who brought property one from the other, but furthermore, they are viewed ukloiteach shloi bachrayis tami. It's like if I buy property from you, and in the contract there is no clause that I will, that if the property is taken away, because there's a lien on this property, that I have right, I have recourse back to the person I bought from. So here too, when the brothers divide the estate amongst themselves, they are viewed like lekuches shloi bachrayis, and the brother who loses the property is the one that suffers the total loss. As the Rishonim, that we have learned so many times the concept of a chrayis tor soifer, that even if there's a contract between a seller and a buyer, and in the contract there is no clause of a chrayis, we assume that tor soifer, it was a mistake made by the soifer by omitting it, but there's a chrayis is always included. So the question is, here, why do we say that there's no a chrayis, and the brother who gave it up loses entirely? So some Rishonim explain that Shmuel doesn't agree with the concept of a chrayis tor soifer, and Shmuel holds a chrayis lav tor soifer. Chrayis doesn't automatically become part of every deal. That's one opinion in the Rishonim. But there's another opinion that I saw in the Rishonim. Where is there a halacha of a chrayis tor soifer? The halacha of a chrayis tor soifer was said in a situation where there's a seller and a buyer. And if I buy something from you, if they have if I buy something from you, there a halacha is that even if achrayus wasn't mentioned in the contract, it's automatic. But here we're not referring to a situation where there's a buyer and a seller. Here we're referring to a situation of brothers who divide Yerusha amongst themselves. So even though the halacha looks, according to Shmuel, at this transaction as a transaction of lekuchas, it's not a typical mechira, and the halacha of achrayus tos sofer would not apply. The Paiskim say, besides for the nafkamina that our Gemara is pointing out, if we consider achim shecholku yorshim, or we consider them lekuchas, there are other nafkaminas lahalacha. One nafkamina lahalacha I saw that the Paiskim suggest is regarding yovel. The halacha is if somebody purchases something by yovel, it goes back to the original owner. So if we say achim shecholku lekuchas hava, every time brothers divide an estate, that division will only stand until yovel. And when yovel comes, everything goes back. If, on the other hand, we hold yorshim hava, the din of yovel, that everything goes back to where it started, doesn't apply to yorshim. Another nafkamina is that we discussed earlier in our masechta, where if people purchase items one from the other, if I buy a bar, if I buy a pit from you, or if I sell you my property, but I retain the pit, do I retain a right of way? Do I not retain a right of way? All of those halachas, say the Paiskim, will only be applicable if we consider them lekuchas. But if, on the other hand, we consider them yarshim, the halacha, that all those halachas would not apply. The division of a Yerusha is a complete division with the two brothers having no claims to each other. Rather, it's a complete, total, separate division between these two parties. Now the Gemara turns to understand the opinion of Rav Asi. Rav Asi, on the other hand, says the Gemara Mesapkalei. Rav Asi actually has a question. Should we treat them Iyarshin Hava, Ilakuchas Hava? Should we follow the opinion of Rav, or should we follow the opinion of Shmuel? Hilkach, because we have this question. So, again, the Gemara is referring to a simple situation, even though that's not the only situation the Gemara is talking to, as I said at the beginning of the Shir. And therefore, the halacha will be as follows. Noitl Rvi Bekarka or Rvi Bemaz. If there were only two brothers, and one brother paid off the debt, so according to Rav, from a property that he took, so according to Rav, he gets half. According to Shmuel, he's responsible for half, and he's going to be reimbursed by his other brother for half. According to Shmuel, we just learned, since they're lekuchas, he loses it all by himself. Rav Asi has a question: what to do? Should he or shouldn't he? So Rav Asi follows the opinion of Maman Amutal B'Sofik Cholkim. It's a question, and therefore instead of paying half, he only pays a quarter. And that quarter, says Rav Asi, the brother who's going to reimburse him has a right to pay him either in cash or in mas, whatever he prefers. The Rishonim and Achronim again discussed the question that we have discussed many times, that this opinion of understanding of Asi is based on the old concept of Maman Amut B'Sofik Cholkim, which is the opinion of Sumchas, and we've said many times that the Rabbanon don't agree with Sumchas, they don't agree with the concept of Maman Amut B'Sofik Cholkim, so how does Rav Asi follow it? So some Rishonim say that Rav Asi disagrees with the Chachamim. Rav Asi paskins like Sumchas that Maman Amut B'Sofik Cholkim. However, other Rishonim say that even the Chachamim in such a situation would agree to the concept of Maman Amut B'Sofik Cholkim. For they say, where do we apply the concept? Where do we have a dispute? If we follow the concept of Maman Amut B'Sofik Cholkim, the opinion of Sumchas, we don't say Maman Amut B'Sofik Cholkim, is a situation where we have two parties. Each party has a claim. And because each party has a claim, we now have a Din Torah. That's why it's Maman Amut B'Sofik Cholkim. However, here, the Suffolk was not created because of the tightness of the two parties. Rather, the Suffolk was created because of the reality of the facts. There, everybody agrees to the concept of Mammon HaMut B'Suffolk Cholkim. Another pshat that I saw in the Rishayim and Achrayim is as follows. Where did the Rabbanim disagree with Sumchis and do not follow the concept of Mammon HaMut B'Suffolk Cholkim? That's in a situation where everybody is muchsik in his property. So the Racham don't hold that if somebody's muchsik, we could easily take it away. They're much bigger proponents of the concept of Amoitzi Mechaveroi Olav Haraya. However, here where their chazaka, their hold on this property, is a weaker hold in the first place, because if the division was an improper division of the state to start off with, then it's not in the first place a situation of chazaka. There everybody will agree Mammon HaMut B'Suffolk Cholkim. This is the pshat that most Rishonim learned the Gemara with. However, the Rashbam says another pshat in the Gemara in the name of Rashi, that Rav Ashi, it says that the second brother has to give the brother who was dispossessed a half. But unlike Rav, who says that that half that he gives him is given to him in property, rather he's going to give it to him one quarter in land and one quarter in money. Because according to this explanation, Rav Ashi is not sure if they're considered like Lekuchis or Yarshim, but even according to this pshat, if they are considered like Lekuchis, there's still going to be the din of Achrayis Tos Soifahu, and therefore, even if we'll say they're Lekuchis, he has to reimburse his brother who was dispossessed. The only question now is, how does he get reimbursed? If they're Yarshim, he gets reimbursed, he gets reimbursed in land. If he's Lekuchis, he gets reimbursed with money. Because we have a question, how to look at it, says Rav Ashi, he's certainly reimbursed, again, if there's a case of only two brothers, for 50% of what he paid out. But because we don't know how that should be paid back, so he gives him one quarter, one half of what he has to give him in the land, and one half of what he has to give him, he gives him it with karka, with property. Says the Gemara, Amar Papa. Says Rav Papa, Hilchos HaBechol HaNishmatza, the halach in all these situations is mekamtzim, that we follow the opinion of Shmuel, that if a situation came up that we have to redivide, the halach is that we don't void the entire original division, we rather adjust it, and every brother has to give something up. Again, the Rishonim say that this is a riot to what we discussed at the beginning of our shir. How many brothers are we referring to in this Gemara? It's a riot that we're referring to three brothers, because by two brothers, there is no concept of mekamtzim. Amemah says, batla machlokes. If the gairul has turned out to be wrong, then the entire gairul is void, and we have to do it over. And that indeed is the halacha, batla machlokes. If a development comes up that puts into question the entire status of the Geirel, as we discussed in the previous year, a third brother showed up, Batla Machlaikas, the entire division is void, and we have to do it again. In fact, the Paiskim go into great detail to discuss situations where a Geirel was done, and it turns out that the Geirel was done improperly, but there's still people that want to follow the Geirel. For example, the question that came up many times was as follows, where in the time, earlier times, unlike nowadays, where all the Yisoyimim, Rachman, and Tzlan say Kaddish, only one person said Kaddish at a time. And let's say Rachman, and Tzlan, there were many Yisoyimim, they would make a Geirel who should make who should say the Kaddish. What is the halacha if the Geirel was discovered that it was done improperly, but there's certain people who certainly lost, and there's certain people who certainly won, but amongst the people who certainly won, there was a discrepancy in the Geirel. Is the Goyal redone? Or could these people say, you know, we'll leave the Goyal as it is and we'll straighten that amongst ourselves? So the Paiskim suggest that any time there's a question to the validity of the Goyal, even if some of the people, and they're the only people that would be relevant, want to keep the results of the Goyal, the Paiskim say that the Goyal is voided. Because a Goyal is only valid if it's done completely correctly. The example is an Al Gemara. An Al Gemara, as soon as it's discovered that a new brother comes, and therefore the original Goyal was done improperly, the Goyal is voided. Because as we discussed in our previous year, a Goyal is Minashamayim. And for a Goyal to be valid Minashamayim, it has to be done 100% properly. If it isn't done 100% properly, the Goyal is void. There's another interesting question that the Rishonim discussed already, similar to Al Gemara. Al Gemara referred to a situation where there were brothers who divided up a Yerusha, and a Baal Chayiv came and collected what was due to him from one of the brothers. The Rishonim discussed a situation where somebody borrowed money, and as the Gemara and the Torah already speaks many times about an Orev, a guarantor, there were two guarantors to the loan. What is the halacha if the loiva is unable to pay his debt? Does the malva collect from both guarantors equally, or does the malva have a right to collect from one guarantor only? The Rambam's opinion, which is similar to Al Gemara, is that just like in Al Gemara, the Baal Chayiv didn't collect a little piece from each brother. He just went to one brother, and then afterwards, as we just finished learning the sugya, the other brothers have to work it out amongst themselves. Here too, says the Rambam, if there's such a situation, the malva goes to one orev. However, the Raiva disagrees. The Raiva is of the opinion that the obligation is divided amongst the orevim, amongst the guarantors. The halacha follows the opinion of the Rambam. I also saw that the Paiskim suggests that this is certainly a situation where we follow the Minhag HaMedina, and the Minhag HaMedina is that if somebody put up, the secular law is that if somebody put up a number of pieces of property as collateral, you don't take from each piece of property, you could go to one piece of property, or you could go to one guarantor. Not every guarantor is equally responsible. Says the Gemara, Tana Rabbanan, Shloisha Shiyar Dulashum. If the three Dayanim, the one who appraise the property, and the Rishonim discuss under what circumstances would they want to appraise a property. The simple situation that the Rishonim suggest is the situation where an Almana wants to collect a Ksuba, and they're collecting, and they want to know. And she wants to take the piece of property as her ksuba payment. The state, the Yerushim, are willing to give it up as the ksuba payment. And they need to evaluate its value. And Beis Din's obligation now is to do that evaluation. Another situation that somebody owes somebody else money, similar situation. And he wants to take property to pay off his debt. And Beis Din is going to now evaluate what is the value of that property. So we have three members of Beis Din that are evaluating that property. Echad Oimer, one dayan says that it's worth a mana, 100 zuz. Shnayim Oimer Masayim. And two dayanim say it's worth 200 zuz. Or, Echad Oimer Masayim, one dayan says it's worth 200 zuz. Shnayim Oimer Mana, and one dayan says it's worth 100 zuz. The halacha is batel yachid b'miyutai. As in all areas of halacha, we follow the rov, and whatever the rov says goes. However, continues the Gemara, if one dayan says mona, it was worth 100 zuz. Echraim b'esrim, one says it was worth 80 zuz. Vechraim b'shloshim, one says it was worth 120 zuz. So we have a machloikus what to do. Tanakama holds. And we're going to explain, the Gemara is going to explain each opinion. Tanakam is of the opinion, needed the mana. We value it as a mana. Rabbi Lazar of Tzadok Omer, Nidin Betishin. Its value at 90. Chayim Omerim, others say, the Chayim say, Oitzin Shumim Beinayim, Mishalshim Mishalshim. Which means, we take the difference between the lowest and highest appraisal, we divide it by 3, and then we add that number on top of the lowest. So in this situation, where the lowest appraisal was 80, the highest appraisal was 120, so there's a discrepancy of 40. We take that number 40, we divide it by 3, which is 13 and a third, and we add 13 and a third to 80. And now the Gemara, as I said, begins to explain each opinion. Mandam anidim b'mana. The Tanakamu's opinion was that we value it as a mana. He says we follow milsim tziyosli, something in the middle. And as a machlokes rishonim, how to understand this opinion? Some rishonim explain that we take the number that's in the middle between the three other, between the three numbers. That means specifically this case where it's 80, 100, and 120. So 100 is right in between 80 and 120. However, the other what would be, however, according to this opinion, according to this shita, if the middle opinion wasn't exactly 100, it was a little less than 100, or was it more than 100? He's the middle opinion, but he's not right in the middle between all the numbers. According to this understanding of this opinion, then we wouldn't follow that opinion. It's only because he's right in the middle. Others explain, however, that it's not because this is the number that's right in the middle. It's because this is the dayan. He's the judge who's right in the middle. And therefore, even though if his number is not a number which is exactly in the middle, still that will be the number that we will follow. Rabbi Lazar of Tzedek Omer, on the other hand, needn't petition. Why? Kesavar, the way he explains is as follows. Kesavar, ha'ara, tishin shavar. The land is actually worth 90 zuz. V'hai dekama esrim, the one that said that was worth 80 zuz, dekot toy esr el churi, he undervalued it by 10. Ha dekama mana, the one that said that was worth 100, was because kot toy esr el kamei, he overvalued it by 10. And therefore, the number 90 is right in the middle between the 100 and the 80, and that's the number we take as being the real value of this land. Ask the Gemara, but what we have done is we have ignored the opinion of the one that said that the land is 120. And ask the Gemara, Adarabba, Tai Aramei Vesreshavya, why don't we say that the land is really worth 110? V'hai Dekam Mona, the one that said it's only worth 100, Katar Sar Lachurei, said it was worth 100 when it's really worth 110. Hai Dekam Shloshim, the one that said it was 120, Katar Sar Lachurei made a mistake, where it's really worth 110, and he overvalued it by 10 and said 120. The Ramban makes a very nice deek in the Gemara. The Ramban says that the Gemara uses the word Adarabba. Why does the word Gemara use the word Adarabba? The Gemara should have used the word Dilma. So, explains the Ramban, going back to what we said a little earlier. The case of Al Gemara is referring to a situation where the Yoshim are paying off the Ksuba of their father's wife. And as we've learned, the Yoshim were always concerned about the benefit of the Yoshim. So therefore, what Bezdin ought to do, says the Gemara, is not look at a lower value. We should look at the higher value, which would benefit the assignment, because it would cause a situation where it's worth more rather than less. Pnei Shlomo has a different pshat understanding the Gemara. He says that people have a tendency of sometimes of undervaluing versus overvaluing, and that's why the Gemara should have said Adarabba. Answers the Gemara. So again, the Gemara's question is that according to this opinion, according to the opinion of Rabbi Lazar of Tzadok, we're only taking into consideration the opinions that are lower, not higher. And the Gemara's question is, why are we only taking into consideration opinions that give the land a lower value, not take into consideration the opinion that gives it a higher value? Answers the Gemara, Adirabba. Answers the Gemara, the Koit Mi'ez Trei Kam B'yotcha. We prefer to only take in consideration the lower values, the Mataris Manolai Mavgalei. Because everybody agrees that it's certainly worth a mana. Which, the way most Rishonim explain what the Gemara is saying is, Tfasta Meruba Tfasta, Tfasta Meruba Loi Tfasta Mur Tfasta. We always go with the lower number. Now the Gemara explains the third opinion, the opinion of the Acherim. Acherim Oimrim, as we explained, Oitzim Shum by name, Umashashim. We take the value, the difference, the 40, between the lowest and the highest, and we divide it. Says the Gemara, Kasavar, because they hold that high ara tisha v'tulsa v'tulsa shavya, that this property is really worth 93 1/3 zuz. High the kama esrin, the one that said it was worth 80, katah tleisa v'tulsa achurei, he makes a mistake and he undervalues it by that amount. V'high the kama mum, the one that says that it's worth a mum, katah tleisa v'tulsa l'kamei, he makes a mistake, and he overvalues the property by saying it's really worth 1/13 1/3 more than it really is. Or bedinhu, the lame tfei, he really should have said, therefore not 100, he really should have said 106 2/3. For hai the loy kamer, why didn't he say 106 2/3? Why did he only say 100? It's enough that I already added more, that my colleague said 80, and for me to say 100, there's a very significant difference between 80 and 100. He's scared to say that it's worth 100 2/3. Ask the Gemara again, Adrabba, why don't we say ha ara meir tlosav tulsa shavya, that this property is worth 113 1/3. Hi, the common mono, the one that said was the one that appraised it at 100, katar tilslay svatoslachure, undervalued it by 13 1/3, and he should have said 100. That's why he said 100. For had the common shloshim, the one that said it's worth 120 zos, toy tlosvatosla kamei, he made a mistake and by overvaluing it. Or Bedinhu, really what he should have said, who the common tfei, he should have said that it's worth more than 120, because it's really worth 13 1/3 more than 113 1/3, which would bring us to 136 2/3. However, he didn't want to make such a big difference. Sova mistoy de kometan kulahai mechavroi. I don't want to say more, so much more than the original amount. So again, why are we following the opinion, the two lower opinions, not the high opinion? Answers the Gemara, the koit mi'ez trei kam biyotcha, we follow the lower opinion, as we said before, the mataris manu loy mafgalei, because tefasta meruba loy tefasta. The Rishonim asked about the obvious question in understanding this Gemara. In understanding this Gemara, it assumes that that there was an order said in who cited their opinion. Let's go back a drop, where the Gemara took the original opinion, where the Mandama who said 80 said 80, but it's really worth 93 1/3, and the Mandama who said 100 really wanted to say 106 2/3. He was just too afraid to say it because he didn't want there should be such a large discrepancy between him and the lower opinion. But that assumes that the person who said the lower number said his number first. How do we know that he said his number first? So the Rashbam says that even if he didn't say as an official decision his lower number first, but when they were deliberating, when the Dayanim were deliberating amongst themselves, everybody saw which direction everybody was going. And the Mandomer that was going to say 100, the Mandomer that really thought it was 106 2/3, as we're now saying, Aray heard his colleague was holding by 80, and that tempered him into saying only 100. And the same in the next Gemara. Other Rishonim explain the Gemara a little differently. They explain the Gemara that the way that the judges were polled in reaching their decision was that whoever was sitting there, whoever was the chairman of the Dayanim, would say, do I hear anybody say that this property is worth 70? Nobody said anything. Do I hear 80? Then the judge said 80. So it came out that the one who said the lowest opinion said his opinion first, because that's how the polling of the judges went. And that's why his opinion is cited first, and that had an influence on the way the other judges stated their opinion. Amar Rav Huna, Paskins Rav Huna, Halach Kacherim. The Halach is like the Kacherim. Amar Rav Ashi, Tam Dacherim Lo Yadinan. We don't understand their opinion. And as the Rishonim explained, the Gemara didn't give the opinion. The Gemara doesn't like the way they explained the opinion. Or, as we learned, there were questions on their opinion. The questions all lead that, according to their opinion, everybody made a mistake. Or, as we just explained, the Rishonim say that the problem with this pshat is that this pshat suggests that judges' opinions are influenced by the opinion of their colleagues, which is a question on the integrity of the Dayanim. And that's why, says Rav Ashi, I'm not happy with the Achayim's reasoning. Hilchasa Avdinuka V'asayu, do we follow their psak? And from here, points out the Sefer Shem Tzion B'Halacha, that whenever it comes to Paskin Ashayil L'Halacha, we have to follow an opinion that makes the most sense. That's why the Gemara says all over Shas that we follow the opinion of Elazar ben Yaakov, because Namukai Imai, because what he says makes most sense. Tana Dayanim deGeula, the Dayanim deGeula Paskin, Oysa Shumim beNeim Mishal Shlim. We take the difference and we divide it. Amar Rav Huna, Hilchasa kDayanim deGeula. The Halacha follows the Dayanim deGeula. Amar Rav Ashi, Tam the Dayanim deGeula Lo Yadinan. We don't understand their opinion. Hilchasa v'Dayanim kAvasayu. Says the Mishnah. If somebody says to someone else, I'm selling you half of the field, and he didn't specify which half, we divide the quality between them. Tomorrow we'll explain this in a moment. And he takes half the field as his. If he says, I'm selling you the field southern half, again, and he has to take upon himself Mokar Mageder, the space for the fence, Charitz, Ben Charitz, a wide trench and a narrow trench. Vekamu Charitz, Shishitfachim. Ben Charitz, Shloisha. The Rishonim debate, this is talking about the width of the Charitz and Ben Charitz. What will be the din regarding the depth? And the Rishonim say that the same shear that there is for the width is going to be for the depth. In the case where he says, I'm selling you half the field, the buyer gets the weaker, the more inferior half, and the other one gets the better half. That means we don't divide the field into two halves of equal size. Rather, we divide the field into two halves of equal value, and the seller could choose to give the buyer the larger half, which is of the more inferior quality. Amalei Rav Chibar Abel Rav Yochanan Vanan Mishamnim B'Neim Tanan. Our Mishnah says that we do Mishamnim. Doesn't Mishamnim mean that each one gets an equal share in good quality and an equal share in inferior quality? Amalei Ad Achlis Kefniyais V'Bovel, while you were eating dates and Bovel, Taginim Seifa, I brought a raya from the Sefer. So Mepharshim discussed what does it mean that he was eating dates in Bavel. Pashup Shad is that while you were eating dates, you were busy eating, not learning. I learned right Pshat. Another Pshat is that in order to succeed in learning Torah, you have to be a person that's memus atzmai. Adam kiyamus ba'oyel. You have to be ready to exert yourself. Sitting and eating dates and enjoying yourself is not the way you're going to succeed in becoming a Talmud Chacham. But there's a famous tshuva from the Chavos Yoyer, which actually the Chofetz Chaim brings down in his Sefer, where the Chavos Yoyer says, because the Chavos Yoyer in that tshuva discusses that we find many places in Shas that it seems that Tanoim and Amoroim called each other by derogatory names, which is somewhat difficult for us to understand. So the Chavos Yoyer says that Kafriyos mean dates which are not fully developed. And what he was saying was that you only looked at the ratio of the Mishnah. You didn't completely understand the Mishnah by looking at the Sefer of the Mishnah also. Had you looked also at the Sefer of the Mishnah, you wouldn't have jumped. You wouldn't have been like the Kafriyos, that you eat the dates before they developed. You would have seen that your pshat is incorrect. Targim them a Sefer. Let's look at the Sefer of the Mishnah. The Tani Sefer. If the seller says, Chetzi b'dor mani moichaloch, mishamnem b'neim, they divide it between themselves, v'noitel chetzi b'dor. Now, if we're going to learn that mishamna means that the buyer and the seller divide equally superior and inferior portions of the land, amai mishamnim, why would there be that type of situation here? Here the seller clearly told the buyer, v'chetzi b'dor mamalei. He clearly told him, I'm giving you your half in the south. Ella, how must we understand the Mishnah? That we don't understand the Mishnah that they divided specific pieces. They're referring to value. And what he meant here was that I'm giving you a portion of the field equal in value to southern half. We're talking about values, not specific pieces of land. Hachanami and the Reish also don't say that it's talking that he's getting specific pieces of land. We're talking about Lidmei, we're talking about value. We said Mekabel HaMakom Geder. So I learned the Mishnah that the Rishonim say, and this is the Pshat of the Rashbam, that it's the seller's obligation. The other Rishonim that suggests that Pshat in the Mishnah is that it's the buyer's responsibility. The Yad Ramah has a third opinion. He says we have to see in whose portion this gate and charitz fell. And whoever's portion it fell in, that will be the one that has to provide it. Tana, we learned that the Brais Charitz, the wide trench is further away from the fence. Or Ben Charitz, the narrow trench is near the fence. Vizeb, both of them are Geder, behind the fence, outside of the property that was being sold. What is the purpose to have them? Kadesh loite chai kafetzes, so the animal will not be able to jump on the fence and then into the property. Ask the Gemara, v'levet charitz, v'loi levet ben charitz. Why don't we only make a wide trench, not a narrow trench? Answers the Gemara, aydid deravach, if we would only have a wide trench, kaim begavei, the animal could stand in it, v'kaftso, and then jump onto the fence. Ask the Gemara, so if levet ben charitz, v'loi levet charitz. Why don't we make only a narrow one, not a wide one? Answers the Gemara, aydid the cotton, if the trench would be narrow, kaim asfasei, the animal could stand on its outside lip, the kofts and jump onto it, onto the fence from it. Ask the Gemara of a kav ben charitz le ben charitz, how much area is there between the charitz and the ben charitz? Says the Gemara, tefach. Hadron loch beis kor, hadron loch beis kor, hadron loch beis kor.